Just a quick note before we get going. Next Sunday is Easter, so this is our last meeting before Easter. Our next meeting will be after Easter. So today, instead of playing a regular song, I'm going to play a music video.
I've heard about this baby boy who's come to earth to bring us joy, and I just want to sing this song to you. It goes like this, a fourth, a fifth, a minor fall, the major lift. With every breath I'm singing hallelujah, hallelujah. Came to Bethlehem expecting child, they searched the inn to find a place, for you were coming soon, and there was no room for them to stay, so in a manger filled with hay, God's only son was born.
Left their flocks by night to see this baby wrapped in light. A host of angels led them all to you. It was just as the angel said, you'll find him in a manger bed. Emmanuel, our Savior, hallelujah. Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. A star shone bright up in the east, to Bethlehem, the wise men three came many miles and journey long for you. And to the place at which you were, their frankincense and gold and myrrh they gave to you and cried out, hallelujah, hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, April 3rd, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening live over our radio or another network, you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. You can also support us by purchasing the books, Government by Consent and Court Access and the Common Law. You can find them also on the right-hand side of our website. Also, join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. You can find the information, again, on the right-hand side of our website or on our front page, just a couple of inches down. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to veer away from the book we're in, and we're going to read two chapters. One's an Old Testament chapter, Isaiah 53, and the other one is Mark 16. And again, we're going to be reading this because Easter Sunday.
Chapter 53. Who hath believed our report, and to whom is the arm of the Lord revealed? For he shall grow up before him as a tender plant, and as a root out of a dry ground. He hath no form, no comeliness. And when we shall see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him. He is despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows, and acquainted with grief. And we hid as it were our faces from him. He was despised, and we esteemed him not. Surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we did esteem him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions, he was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed, and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is dumb, so he openeth not his mouth. He was taken from prison and from judgment, and who shall declare his generation? For he was cut off out of the land of the living. For the transgression of my people was he stricken. And he made his grave with the wicked, and with the rich in his death, because he had done no violence, neither was any deceit in his mouth. Yet it pleased the Lord to bruise him. He hath put him to grief. When thou shalt make his soul an offering for sin, he shall see his seed. He shall prolong his days, and the pleasure of the Lord shall prosper in his hand. He shall see of the travail of his soul, and shall be satisfied. By his knowledge shall my righteous servant justify many, for he shall bear their iniquities. Therefore will I divide him a portion with the great, and he shall divide the spoil with the strong, because he hath poured out his soul unto death, and he was numbered with the transgressors, and he bare the sin of many, and made intercession for the transgressors.
Okay, second chapter we're going to read is Mark 16, focusing in on the resurrection. Again, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 16. And when the Sabbath was past, Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James and Salome had bought sweet spices that they might come and anoint him. And very early in the morning, the first day of the week, they came unto the sepulchre at the rising of the sun. And they said among themselves, Who shall roll us away the stone from the door of the sepulchre? And when they looked, they saw that the stone was rolled away, for it was very great. And entering into the sepulchre, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in a long white garment, and they were affrighted. And he saith unto them, Be not affrighted. Ye seek Jesus of Nazareth, which was crucified. He is risen, he is not here. Behold the place where they laid him. But go your way, tell his disciples and Peter that he goeth before you into Galilee. There shall ye see him, as he said unto you. And they went out quickly and fled from the sepulchre, for they trembled and were amazed. Neither said they anything to any man, for they were afraid. Now when Jesus was risen early the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had cast seven devils. And she went and told them that had been with him, as they mourned and wept. And they, when they had heard that he was alive and had been seen of her, believed not. After that he appeared in another form unto two of them as they walked and went into the country. And they went and told it unto the residue. Neither believed they then. Afterward he appeared unto the 11 as they sat at meat, and upbraided them with their unbelief and hardness of heart, because they believed not them which had seen him after he was risen. And he said unto them, Go ye into all the world, and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved, but he that believeth not shall be damned. And these signs shall follow them that believe. In my name shall they cast out devils. They shall speak with new tongues. They shall take up serpents. And if they drink any deadly thing, it shall not hurt them. They shall lay hands on the sick, and they shall recover. So then, after the Lord had spoken unto them, he was received up into heaven, and sat on the right hand of God. And they went forth and preached everywhere, the Lord working with them, and confirming the word with signs following. Amen. The end of the Gospel according to St. Mark.
Okay. All right, Jan, do we have any questions out there?
Yes, and one announcement. We've been having trouble limiting the time each questioner on the call gets, and people are complaining because some people are asking six questions instead of just one. So from now on, when people send in a question to questions at National Liberty Alliance, please prioritize the questions. If you have more than one, then I will take the number one priority and John will address it, and then we will go to the next questioner. So if you don't prioritize it and don't respond to the email, I'll just take the first one on your list. So the first question tonight, then.
All right, well, before we go to the first question, I want to add something to that. anybody in the queue that has any questions, you know, they can ask a question, and if they want, they can kind of do a follow-up question depending on my answer to them and so on. If they have more than one question with a follow-up, then they'll need to get back in line, and we'll, you know, bring them back around again depending on the time. Because some people get shut out of the queue and they don't get to ask their question, so want to make sure we get to everyone, and second time around we'll go second and a third if we have to, at least until the time period is up. All right, with that, go ahead. What's the questions?
Okay, number one. In one of the last classes, you mentioned never wanting to be the defendant, but didn't elaborate much further. Can you elaborate?
Right. If you're a defendant in court, and this may not necessarily, you know, be the same thing if it's a criminal case, and that's dependable too, because let's say an agency is coming out after you, like an IRS, and they're trying to get you criminally. Well, in this case, you can also do a case and become the plaintiff against them. So in the same case, of course, you could become the plaintiff also. It's important to become the plaintiff so that you can kind of bring things back and get it underneath a court of record, which is a court proceeding according to the common law. So, we'll be covering that in our class on how to do that. So we'll further expound on it there. Okay, anything else?
Okay, next question. I assume the notice of motion to show cause jurisdiction is likely how we make that happen, but to clarify?
A motion to show cause? That's what they're looking
for. The question is not well written, John. Let me read it slowly. It doesn't come through to me. I assume the notice of motion to show cause, comma, jurisdiction is likely how we make that happen, but to clarify, period.
Okay, yeah, it's a show cause to challenge jurisdiction is what it is, and we could probably, you know, just drop the show cause point out altogether. I know I did write that in my earlier papers. You know, and as I find my own errors, or people bring errors to my attention, you know, I'll always bring the correction up and make that note, and we will change things. And as far as the course is concerned, any corrections that need to be made after the course is completed, you know, we'll be doing that at the bottom of the course. And also anything new or any additional paperwork or any additional forms that I can add into the course, I'll be adding that also to the course after the course is completed. And we may even call together a certain Saturday so if people wanted to come in and follow along on a live program that would be recorded and then added in after our chapters. But we'll try to update everything we can as we go along. We're all learning together. I'm learning too. So, you know, we'll just bring all our information together and share it. Now, going back to the question as far as a jurisdiction, it's really a challenge of jurisdiction or jurisdictional challenge. And so if you want to challenge a jurisdiction, that's a good way to get out of specific courts because most courts don't have jurisdictions. Or they're the wrong jurisdiction and they don't know enough to bring it to the right jurisdiction. And you can bring that to the federal court for cause. And the meaning of cause there is identifying with a violation of one of your unalienable rights, namely in particular due process. You have a right of due process, and the due process can only be given in a court of law, which is a court that proceeds according to the common law. So, and again, we're going to get very deep into that kind of a thing in our course as we go along. All right, next question.
If a case is dismissed for lack of proof to show jurisdiction, is there anything further to pursue? Meaning, can you take that case as evidence to prove ill intent of the court and its participants to have it dissolved?
I'm assuming that that someone's challenging their jurisdiction, it sounds like. Read that again.
If a case is dismissed for lack of proof to show jurisdiction, is there anything further to pursue? Meaning, can you take that case as evidence to prove ill intent of the court and its participants to have it dissolved?
Well, absolutely. If you have to spend your time and maybe even some money in order to move it to federal court for cause, denial of due process requires restitution also. So, if they're not complying and doing the right thing, then of course, then you want to deal with that problem ultimately by putting into your wherefore clause all of those things we just mentioned, and also that they need to cease and desist if they refuse to shut down. But if you're shutting down a court because they don't have jurisdiction on you, and they respond to that in a positive manner, then it's over. If there's a need to sue someone after that, that's a whole different story then. But generally speaking, we're talking about going into a court that's maybe a city court or a village court or a town court, which is not a court of record, which has no ability to have jurisdiction over you without your consent. And therefore, that challenge should be taken. And if they do the right thing, it's over. If they don't, then you got to spend some time and pursue that case by moving it into federal court and then going through to require the necessary restitution with also a command to cease and desist from the federal court. And again, we're going to get into that procedure also in our course.
Okay.
Anything else?
Next question. Do you have any templates for writing a letter to the judge for continuance? Should I say I am seeking counsel if I am not, or can I state that I am going to continue pro se and need time to prepare my response by paper?
Well, no, a letter to the judge would suffice. If you're looking for a continuance, generally speaking, it depends on what court you're in also. The lower courts, the courts that aren't courts of record, you know, if you're trying to stall them out a bit, it's just a matter of a phone call to the clerk, and the clerk will talk with the judge, and the judge will give you whatever you're asking for. Usually, they don't give you a hard time if you need more time. But those, of course, are courts that don't have jurisdiction over you, and if you're trying to bite time for one reason or another, maybe to get better knowledge, be able to write your paper or whatever. And we have papers that you can use right on our website. You'll find them under Education Starts Here. Come down to Law, and then click on Court Forms and Process. Anybody who's a premier member can get this page. A premier member is someone that's supporting us with $5 a month or more. And once you do that, you'll be chalked off as a premier member. And then you'll find this page. If you're not, then you wouldn't find this page. But in here, there's some forms and things that I had put up here. We're going to keep them here. This is outside the course. This is not part of the course, although they will be part of the course, and we'll be updating a lot of these things that are in here, in the course. And then eventually, whatever we do update, we'll update on this paper too. But, you know, these forms are good. A lot of the papers I've written are good. I find every time I look at a paper and I use it again, I find myself massaging it a little bit and, making some corrections or changes or saying things a better way or adding some information in there and so on. So you should be able to find what you're looking for in here I guess that's it. You'll find what you need in here. But as far as going back to the question with the letter is something if you're going into, for instance, if you're in the state court. You know, the state court has a court in every county, so you go into that court. And if you need more time, if you're at a hearing, you can ask for it at the hearing. If you're not at the hearing and you need more time, you can then just write a letter to the judge asking for more time and give them the reasons why you're asking for more time. A good reason, of course, is that you're seeking counsel. And so you're trying to work counsel out, and that's going to take a little time, you know. And that can buy you time. You could probably buy 60 days from that, at least another 30 anyway. And there's no reason why they would refuse you. Matter of fact, they'd like that because they'll think you're looking for a bar attorney, and they'd rather a bar attorney in there than you. So they'll give you that time. But I don't have anything particular. I'll see if I can find something. If I do, we'll bring it into the course. Maybe there's some kind of a form for requesting the continuance. And I'm sure there probably is. But next question.
In last week's class, you talked about going after the people, not the court. So if it's you versus the state, is it just a prosecutor, or can I include the officer who stopped me for not signaling in a significant amount of time and unlawfully searching me and so forth?
Well, I wouldn't go after the police officer unless you really feel you need to. If they didn't have a good reason to search you and you're really that upset about it, I guess you could sue him. But I wouldn't sue the police officer, generally speaking. He's just doing his job. He has no clue what's going on. So, but as far as suing, you know, I would never sue I did sue the IRS in the past, big mistake, but because I'm suing an agency, and what good is that? Now, that creates a whole different thing now when you're suing an agency. What I've realized is to sue the people. So you sue the agents, and you make the point that they've stepped outside of their authority. They no longer have any protection of the state. Because they stepped outside of their authority and their jurisdiction, and they committed a crime, particularly fraud, specifically when we're talking about the IRS. And I'm sure in cases of other agencies, too, you could probably make that case, but each case would be specific and a little different. We will be covering this kind of thing again. We're going to cover an IRS case, my last IRS case that I wrote, and all the necessary attachments. So we're going to be covering a lot of things on that issue as far as who you're suing, why we're suing which ones, and there's a lot involved there, so we'll wait to get to that into the course. But again, suing an agency is problematic. Suing an individual, the other thing is again, because they stepped outside of their authority, but the other thing is they're going to get themselves a U.S. attorney. And I know as soon as I get into the court, I'm going to make the point, why is there a U.S. attorney here? There's no reason for a U.S. attorney to be here. These people stepped outside of their authority. They committed a crime. They committed fraud. They need to get their own representation. Why should I be paying for that through my tax dollars? You know, that's kind of an argument I think I'm going to try to make in my next time I go before the court in that kind of an issue. All right, next.
Okay, for the file on demand notice, if you're dealing with an out-of-state court and you're not there to ask why they won't file it or hand the letter over after they deny you, do you suggest trying to send it once first without the demand notice?
Well, I don't understand what they're trying to do. They're sending a notice in demand. A notice demand basically is telling them to do something, and if they don't do something then that is just and right, then this is what you're going to do. And that's number one. The other thing inside there is you're going to require their bond and their oath and their financials. That's all part inside of a notice in demand. A quo warranto is pretty much the same thing, but it's used pretty much when you're running against officers in a court and you're in a courtroom that's moving, so you do a writ quo warranto, again, which is basically the same thing. It's written almost the same way to a certain degree. Usually a notice in demand could be to a corporation. It could be to some government agency that's not doing their job. So it could be against numerous things, but I wouldn't do a writ quo warranto in outside of the court. I'd only do one inside of the court. So,
okay, my attorney is refusing to provide or confirm a physical address and hasn't sent me copies of paperwork pertaining to my case or filed his withdrawal. Any suggestions?
Well, that's kind of strange. He doesn't give you an address. I don't know how they found that attorney. I mean, they had to find that attorney in an attorney's office or something. Where did they meet them? How did they make contact? And also with the court, I would imagine, well, I know that they put the address because they have to be able to receive mail. And usually, of course, it's their office. It's not their home. So I don't know why that would be. It's kind of strange. I don't have enough information to answer more. Fall asleep, Jan.
Sorry, I had you muted there for a minute, John. This person is taking or has quit teaching, and it was her career because of all of the COVID stuff. She walked away from it. So her questions are, for my research in preparing for court, as I continue to learn from you, where do I read about how to charge for my loss of income, retirement, and Social Security, as well as I had only 5 years left until retirement age, so future losses as well?
Well, you have to collect all that information. You have to get documents to prove that there's a loss there and bring that all together in the court, so everything has to be certified. And certification sometimes can be done, of course, by affidavit. You try to get those things done by other people if possible, but you could do it yourself to some degree anyway. But you have to prove it and show your losses. So that's, I don't know how else to answer anything more than that.
Okay. I guess, let's see. There's one here, but it's not clear to me. I'll read it. I am the petitioner, even if I'm currently the defendant in the case referenced, correct. Is that because it's considered a new motion or cause? And why exactly does it take precedence over the initial case?
Well, sometimes you petition something and as a petitioner and then as the respondents, and that could take place somewhat in a court. But generally speaking, all the motions and everything inside of the court case itself, one is the defendant, the other one is the plaintiff. And so I don't understand the question anything further than that. It's always either the defendant or the plaintiff. So you have to respond in that way and who you are. And never get that mixed up. And again, it can get kind of confusing when you have a lot of defendants in there because you're writing a paper from one person's perspective, and you're going up against maybe 3, 4, 5, or 6 individuals, maybe from different agencies or whatever the case may be. And so that can get a little complex, and we're going to talk about those kind of complexities in our court case, in our course. So it can get quite complex. So I'm going to show you some ideas and thoughts in order to keep it on track and keep focused and keep separated and keep it so the court doesn't get confused. Remember, everything you got to keep as simple as possible. And I like to do things with memorandums attached to the case to further elaborate on a situation or whatever. It could be a memorandum of law, or it could be a memorandum of facts, whatever it is. But in the action itself, you want to keep it very clean, very simple, keep it flowing, and make sure that it doesn't get confusing. Because when you confuse a case, then, you know, it becomes a problem for the people that are deciding it. But anyway, I guess that's about it. Next question.
Okay. The respondent says county district attorney, or would it be the prosecutor?
I don't know what they're doing, so I don't know.
This was the next question after the previous one.
I still don't know what they're doing, though, so I don't understand the question.
No. I understand your issue. Let's try another one. This is the last one. A while back, I got a speeding ticket and had to appear in court. I asked for a 30-day extension, which was granted. I requested the extension in order to give myself time to challenge jurisdiction. Unfortunately, due to the holiday season, I was not able to study, nor did I feel confident enough to go to court. The court system where I live is very corrupt. I never showed up for the court date. Since I never showed up for the court date, which has probably resulted in them issuing me a frivolous warrant against my arrest, how can I fight this? Did I mess myself up by not showing up to court after getting that 30-day extension? If so, what would be the next step?
Right. Again, I presume this is a code case, and I presume it's a town or a village. Huh?
Right. It seems to be.
Yeah, that's what it probably is. And they don't go too quickly to arrest you. And I presume it's a ticket. Did he say what the ticket was for?
Speeding ticket, yes.
Speeding ticket, yeah. It's not a criminal offense. They could make a criminal thing out of it, but they're not going to. Generally, what they'll do is they'll report it to the Department of Motor Vehicles, and then they will issue a warning that you have a violation against you and you're not answering it if you don't answer it in a certain date. Well, actually, they won't even say that. They'll say your license is going to be terminated on a certain date. And the only way to stop that is to go down to the court. You know, this is the way that they push you back into the court. So you got to go down to the court. You have to serve notice and get a new date. And then the court will write a letter and send it to motor vehicles. They have forms for that. It's a procedure. And then motor vehicles will back off. And as long as you get to the next court date, you're good. And maybe that hasn't happened yet, even though it sounds like it's been a while because they're talking about the holidays. But maybe they haven't done that yet because you haven't received anything from the Department of Motor Vehicles. They probably haven't done anything yet unless something crosses in the mail as you're trying to do something. You can just make a phone call down to them and tell them, hey, you know, I got lost in this, that, and the other thing in the holidays and I forgot all about it. Well, whatever excuse you want to make. They really don't care what your excuse is. They want your money. They'll set you another date. And if the date is too early, you might want to ask to do it a little later. You know, you need 60 days or 40 days or something like that instead of probably 20 or 30 or whatever they give you. But with all of the covert and everything, they're probably all backed up. So your court date would be late. And for that reason also, it's probably a reason why nothing has happened yet either. But they're not going to arrest you for a speeding ticket. But besides that, they can't arrest you. Well, they can because they do whatever they want, but it's unlawful. They don't have the authority to arrest anyone, but they do. They do put people in jail, and the sheriff should let them out the back door as they come through the front if he knew his job. But again, a good reason why you need to get a book to your sheriff, you know, government by consent, send them a copy of the book. You know, you click on the link. Let me get to that here. You know, you'll find it on the front page. You'll also find it on the right-hand side of a website. But here, donate campaign for constitutional sheriffs, and basically give you instructions. I was mailing them out, but it's become too much work for me to do. So hopefully people just follow the instructions. And especially the people that are going to the law class, if you can't follow instructions, you got to learn. And learning is just slow your reading down and read one sentence at a time and understanding that one sentence, go to number two, make some bullet point notes of what it is you have to do, and then you go back and you do it. You follow the instructions again. But if you can't follow instructions well, you're going to have a lot of problems in court because there are lots of forms and different things, and each form has its own instructions to them, and they're used for different purposes, and it can get quite confusing. The procedures are really very simple and logical, and you're going to see that as we go through those things. But, again, you can get very confused very quickly. If you don't keep good paper, you know, keeping your papers in order and a good process in order to work through your paperwork. There is a booklet. Let me see if I can get to that real quick. Anyway, follow the instructions here for the sheriff. We ask that you download. There's two letters here. One is a letter from Sheriff Darr. We ask that you print that out, fold it in half, stick it in a book. And also there's a letter from National Liberty Alliance. We ask that you print it out, fold it in half, stick it in a book. And then you go give a copy to your sheriff. And if you're building a committee of safety at the time, just have a 5 or 10 minute meeting with the sheriff and then tell him you're going to follow up with him in 30 days or so or whatever. You'll give him a call. Therefore, he'll realize that you're expecting him to read the book. We did get, I remember someone told me once that they gave the sheriff a book, I forget what the conversation was, but the bottom line says, you think I got time to read this book? Well, you better, buddy. You know, at that point, that's kind of a clue to you. This guy shouldn't be in that office. Okay, because he doesn't know what government by consent is, and the purpose of the book gives him a knowledge of what that is and a knowledge of who the sheriff is and what powers and authorities the sheriff has. And so the book covers that in great detail. So it'd be nice to the sheriff, but I try to find a way to tell him that. Look, at if you do you know the common law? Do you know how things really work? Do you know your powers and authorities? Do you understand what government by consent is and how the people can have it and what your part is to play in this whole role? Do you know those things? I got to believe he's got to, I don't know how he's going to answer that, but the bottom line is that's what the book is about. You tell him and you're expecting him to take a look at it and we want to talk to you, especially if you're building a committee of safety. You know, if you're not building a committee of safety, you know, you might want to follow up and talk with them anyway, but really just getting that book to them, the beginning of the knowledge, is the key part of that thing. And at some point, you're going to want to get a committee of safety going in your county, and you're going to want to meet up with your sheriff, and you're going to want to talk to him about that. And if at that point in time, he says he just doesn't have the time to read, I really, at that meeting, would just say, well, I don't think we have the time to back you up and bring you back into office. Maybe we need someone else in office if you don't have time to read. Not that you would want to embarrass him or not or something, and I'm not sure exactly, you know, how one might want to approach that situation, but definitely it needs to be said somehow, even in private. Well, no, if you're at a committee of safety and he talks like that, then he should be embarrassed to begin with to say something like that. So I don't even know if you could embarrass him. But clearly, they're not qualified to be your sheriff. That would be my attitude. And I'd be working on trying to find someone that would run for sheriff. And at some point in time, when the Committee of Safety is strong enough, if that sheriff is still in office as you get to a certain point and you have a certain number of people working with you, I'd start working on recalling that sheriff, pull him out of office, and call for another vote to bring another sheriff in. And again, we teach you all those things underneath Start a Committee of Safety. We have lots of information on these things. We wrote a book on how to approach this whole process inside Starting a Committee of Safety. So all of that information is in there. You know, it is a lot of information we have to learn, but it's all logical, so you won't really have too much problems remembering it. You might find it problematic to try to articulate it. You know, the more time you spend in something, then the more your ability to be able to articulate the points and remember things. And it kind of just, you know, falls out of your mouth at some point if you're spending a lot of time in these things. But look, at these are things we should have learned in school. We didn't. And we have to learn them now. If we're going to want to take our nation back, we want to take the United States back, we need to learn these things, and we have a duty to do so. And everything you need to know about this, generally speaking, you're going to learn in our course, because we're going to cover this. Okay.
Now there's more on the website, there are some references and quotes to Supreme Court cases. We have been using them for notices and affidavits. We've been getting challenges and getting pushback on a few of them. Then when searching for the full text, we can't find the quotes. Yeah, and
go back and start all over again. I'm sorry.
Okay, on the website. That's mm-hmm. our website, I'm assuming. Right. There are some references, okay? And quotes to Supreme Court cases. We've been using them for notices and affidavits. They've apparently been filing stuff. We have been getting challenged and getting pushback on a few of them. Then when searching for the full text from these Supreme Court cases, we can't find the quotes in the cases. They have five different Supreme Court cases here: Self versus Ray, Ray Donovan, Murdoch versus PA, Sheldon versus Alabama, Rodriguez versus Ray. They have the cases, but they can't find the verbiage in them. They wondered if maybe they've been scrubbed from the internet.
Well, no, you know, possibly, I don't know on that. But you can't, this is why Black's Law Dictionary is really great. You can search even Self versus Ray, for instance, do a search for that in Black's Law, and you'll be pulled into numerous places whenever they quote those particular cases. Almost every case that I quote, I have gotten out of Black's Law. Not all, but quite a few of them, most of them. I've been collecting court cases for a long time, and putting it together in a way that, let me just give you, for instance, education come down to the table of contents. Okay, in here we have footnotes, okay? So I've shared all my footnotes, and I got most of them in here. I think I have some pages of footnotes, and I think I've shared, I shared that in this course also. If not, I will add them in here. But let's see footnotes, let's see where that is. It is footnote. Okay, you click on that, open up the zip, and it should pop open. Come on. Let me see. Maybe I got to go here to see it. It's opening up on my other side here. Here it is. Oh, that's the downloads. That's not what I want. Okay, here it is. All right, these are my footnotes. And basically, let me try to find view if I can. View. And we'll do small icons. All right, so if it's a key word that's being quoted or you know, a phrase, the footnote is next to, you should be able to find it in here. Okay, so I've just, again, these are all my footnotes that I've been using over the years, and I always continue to add to them. You can go through any of these and try to find it. You can also do, another way you can pursue something, let's say, if you go to your search and you put content, semicolon, and then you put self v Wade. How do you spell Wade? Is it Wade? Jen? Self versus something?
I missed that, John.
Yeah, the case that they're looking for, one of the things they said was self versus Wade, I think, or is Wade, Wade?
No, Wade, no. There was Self versus Ray, R-A-Y.
R-A-Y. Okay, so let's see if we can find it that way. Look, so far, no items match. So not sure exactly how it's written up for searching, but let's just look for Self. Should be able to find it that way. Oh, wait, I got to go back. I guess I got to open that up again. Let's try content now. Content will search for words inside of these different text files. And I do have some Word files in here also. So let's look for self, S-E-L-F. See if that shows up. That doesn't show up either. All right, so that may have been a case that I didn't get there, but there's a lot of cases that are there, and I'd have to look in another place to find it. But I do know on the website, when I quote a case or something of that nature, unless it's in a paper like a PDF or Microsoft Word, where I put the case numbers into the footnotes. But on a web page, I don't do that. I usually don't even put a footnote on the web pages. I used to do it, but it really gets combobulated on a website. On Word or on, and of course, when you create a PDF out of Word, you know, it's in much in order. It's on the bottom of the foot of the page, each page. That's where the footnotes are at. But you can also do endnotes. So, but anyway, you should try to search out the word by going back again and seeing, do they read out what the case said?
Jim? No, they just... said that when they went looking for the specific verbiage that they pulled out of that case, they couldn't.
If you take the keywords on the case, you should find wherever the footnote was attached, you'll find a word or a phrase, and that's what you want to search in Black's Law, that word or that phrase, and that's where you'll get that information from. You will find it in Black's Law. So, okay. All right, any other questions?
They had one here that it's not... It doesn't have too much information. They want to know if you might want to combine efforts for a sheriff's project, but no definition. They are using notices. If you're interested, they can send you the information that they've been using.
Yeah, I don't know what they're talking about. So maybe we'll see if we could find time to look into that. I don't know.
Okay. And that's it.
Okay. All right, we're going to go over to Q&A. So let's see if there's anybody in Q&A. There's a couple people. Anybody wants to get into the Q&A? I believe it's a *6 and 1 if you're on a phone, but if you're on an app of some kind, you'll see a button. And maybe someone could tell us what it is on the phone so that we can let people know. But Hawaii, you got the mic. See, go right ahead, Hawaii. You got the mic.
Aloha.
Aloha.
This is Sandra from Hawaii. There seems to be some controversy as to the integrity of the 14th Amendment, and I'm wondering what your take is on that.
I've been back and forth on the 14th Amendment, and at this point in time, I've looked back over to think it's all okay. And it was also a necessity, I think, my latest thinking on this. I do know the problem with the 14th Amendment is the use of the word citizen and the game that they play with the meaning of that, and that's the game they play. But let's look at that 14th Amendment. Let me open up to that. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges. Now, this was written, it should be connected with the 13th Amendment, the slavery, and neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for a crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Now, we are in the jurisdiction of the United States, and the jurisdiction of the United States is common law. So that's our jurisdiction that we're in. They will play games with that because they try to give things different meaning. We're talking about, ultimately, the Bar Association and judges and all the people that are maintaining the status quo. Also, a game is played with the word citizen. We are citizens of the United States. Everybody is a citizen of the United States. No matter where you're born in the United States, you're a citizen of the United States. The point is that you're a citizen of any state you decide to be in at the time. You know, you can even be traveling through a state and then you can file a lawsuit in another state or whatever the case may be, and you got all the rights as anybody else in that state. And everything, you know, all the laws and everything apply. But I think they were playing a game with the slaves. Some research I'd done recently, and I put a page up here under, is it under, no, it's under today's issues. Yeah, Anarchy USA, okay? And I spoke about this last week. Anybody who hadn't seen these videos, you really need to see these videos and go all the way through with it because it's really going to give you an eye-opening thing. What I found out in researching some of the stuff when I refound this video, this video I had watched many, many years ago, and I used to have it up on my YouTube, but my YouTube was taken down, and I just put it up on my Rumble, and I put it up on this page here, which, again, is the name of this thing, is Anarchy USA. But in my research as I went through that, because I pulled some other videos together on this page, and slavery in America and founding fathers, communists have taken control of our universities, and that's what you're going to find. This is backing up what you're going to watch in Anarchy USA, and this has been going on for quite some time. This goes back into the 60s and even the 50s. But we also have a G. Edward Griffin, okay, which also did the Anarchy USA. He's got a documentary here. It's a two-hour-long one, I think. Very powerful, very informative, really lays it out. This is early 60s, and he talks about this problem here with the communists is more deadly than war. Okay, no place to hide. Again, it's a follow. It works with all these other videos. Just some more information, and this is a powerful one here. The KGB training of the 1960 radicals, and this guy here was a Russian a spy. Or he worked for the what is it that's in? We got the CIA. What is it that Russia has?
KGB.
KGB. He worked for the KGB. And he defected and came to the United States, and this is one heck of an interview. Anybody hasn't seen this one, you got to see it. Again, this is Griffin. Again, he's done a lot of great. He's done about 20, maybe even 25 documentaries over the years, and all of them are excellent.
He's still alive?
Oh, yeah, he's still alive. I think he's pushing 90. He's a creature from Jekyll Island. This all plays in, and this... And in this Hidden Agenda by Norman Dodd. Now, again, this puts everything into perspective, what's been going on since the 50s and even back into World War II. But one of the interesting things here is the communist movement and how they've taken over the Democratic Party ultimately. And the Democratic Party is the party of slavery. It was the Democratic Party that pushed out and pushed in the 13th Amendment and even the 14th Amendment. Not that they wanted to, but they had control over that, and they played games with the meaning of words to begin with. But it's the Democratic Party that required blacks to get licenses if they're going to marry. And I don't know, remember whether it's whether they're going to marry someone outside of their race or just get marriage altogether. And I think it's married altogether. Eventually it moved on to all of us. But it was a way for them to control the black people. They had a fear for the black people. And then, of course, they then pushed in Lincoln's day, they pushed forward the Jim Crow laws, which was segregation throughout the South. This is all the Democrats doing this. The Republican Party, I just found this out, the Republican Party, what's his name, Lincoln. President Lincoln was the first Republican president, and the Republican Party was really came together to go up against the Democrats, okay, because and they had this party called the Democrats, and I think there was the Whigs or some other parties. But anyway, the Republican Party collected themselves in order to fight these people, to free the slaves. It was the Republican Party that has always been, you know, to get the slaves free and to bring them back into normalization with the rest of the nation. And it's a Democratic Party that has kept slavery alive because they keep talking about it and they do all kinds of things. These videos make all this very, very clear. So if you haven't seen these videos, you really need to take a look at this page, spend some hours, because it's quite a few hours. This, I think, is an hour long. And also, I wrote up some history on this and how things started going all the way back to 1750 when we were a colony, and already the slavery problem was already in this nation. And, of course, they were trying to take control of our courts by creating the Bar Association in 1750. But anyway, this leads you through a lot of the history, so I wrote some of this stuff up. But then you watch these videos, and then you'll get the whole picture. It's really an eye-opener, bringing all these together. And this guy here is pretty interesting. I found him about a month or two ago. I've been watching a lot of his videos, and he just comments on other videos and different things. And he's really laying out a lot of the stuff I'm just talking about right now. And he says his eyes were open because he used to believe that the Republicans were the bad guys, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But he's been awakened, and he shows you the communist movements on the college campuses, and you know, the destructive attitudes, and what they expect for themselves, but they refuse to give you. You know, so they want they want you to be tolerant to them, but they will not be tolerant to you. And These particular videos, those two videos particularly, show it very clearly. I think we have some other videos I'm going to pull onto this page and drop them in here also. But anyway, let's move on.
So just specifically to the 14,
going back to this. Let's go back to this. Okay, a person born or naturalized. Remember, the United States, in the Constitution, we gave the federal government the job of naturalizing to become a citizen of the United States. And of course, you know, it couldn't be left open to the states individually. It would become a mess. So it did make sense to put it into the federal government. So they become a citizen of the United States, but you also become a citizen of the state you decide to live in. Just like anyone born here in America, you're a citizen of the United States. And if you're born in New York, you're a citizen of New York. You decide to move to New Jersey or Texas or something, and you become a citizen there. You become a citizen anywhere you want to go, and you don't have to fill out papers. You don't have to make any forms up or anything and file them anywhere. No, you just are. You're one of the people, and that's that. Okay, so anyway, let's look back at this. All persons born and naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States. Now, again, I think they wrote this up, and it should have been attached to the 13th Amendment, because remember, they robbed us of the original 13th Amendment, and they hid that by breaking this amendment up, I believe, by breaking the 13th and the 14th Amendment up into two parts when it should have been just the 14th Amendment. Remember, the original 13th Amendment, which was, I believe, written in 1819 or 1818, I think. So anyway, that was passed there. Then it disappeared. By the time you come to the 13th Amendment in 1865, there's no talk or no sign of the original 13th Amendment anymore. We've done papers on this, and you can find a lot of information on our website. But anyway, reading back on, subject to the jurisdiction thereof, the citizen of the United States and the state wherein they reside, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges. Now, I don't like that word privileges, but or immunities of the citizen of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Now, it's interesting that they put this deny or deprive a person of life or liberty, because they're referring now to the black people, I think. But it's general. It's any person. It doesn't really matter. But the point was, this was created and made in order to really free the slaves, the combination of the 13th and the 14th Amendment. And that's why it was written. If you say, well, okay, that word citizen, they give it another meaning, well, then it does become problematic in that way. But look at, let's not let them change the meanings of our words. Let's stand on our grounds. Let's call it what it is. It's a fraud, and this is what it means. We can go into Black's law and prove it. You know, we had an individual, I've mentioned this at the other, at our last course on Saturday, the session we had on Saturday for the course, that someone was talking about inalienable, unalienable being being different things. And I, you know, I did get some information from that person. I looked it up. They referred to a court case. It was a Michigan court case, but it wasn't a Supreme Court court case of Michigan. It's a lower court. It's a state court, and their decision was out of that court, and somehow the judge wrote something up that inalien means that rights can be taken away. So I don't know what took place in that case. I didn't read the whole case. But that was the case that was being focused in on. But that's just some clown with some authority that's maintaining the status quo that makes a statement that that this is what it means, and then someone else will pick it up and use those as they claim that to be common law, a collection of court cases where they apply the final results of a court case that's similar to your case, trying to push that same kind of decision onto your case. I mean, this is the game that lawyers play. But common law, there's a maxim in common law that says a thing similar is not necessarily the same thing. So it doesn't apply. It doesn't matter how close it looks. It could be 99% the same way, but it's still not the same. My court case stands on its own, in its own facts. Mm-hmm. We apply the law to both. But anyway, that's the only place that I've seen. I went black. The person who sent it to me, who sent me information, I guess someone else had written up on a website, because I think that's where I went to a website to see this stuff. And on that website, it had the meaning of unalienable, and they took a Black's Law Dictionary out of it, and they gave the meaning of it, but then it came to inalienable, and actually they used the fifth edition on that. I used the fourth, and they're both the same anyway, in that word. But inalienable means the same thing as unalienable. Black's Law Dictionary says it's synonymous. I'm not going to take the words of any judge that turns the meaning of a word that's in the Black's Law Dictionary and Bouvier's Dictionary, words that have held for 100 years, the meaning through courts and things, and all of a sudden one judge is going to change the meaning. So the point is that, you know, again, we have the same thing with citizen. Now, we know that citizen is okay to use because our founding fathers used it, and it's used seven times in the Constitution. So we shouldn't have a problem with being a citizen of this common law republic. That's who we are. We're citizens of a common law republic, just like we may be citizens of God's kingdom. If we're a Christian, we're citizens of God's kingdom, so to speak. You know, we can use that kind of word. I've heard it used before. I can use it, too. I don't find a problem with that. Being a citizen doesn't put us under civil law. It puts us, if we're a citizen of this common law republic, then we're under the law, because that's what this republic is all about. It's under the law and not under equity, not under civil law. So, okay. Anyway, I think I agree that the 14th Amendment is not a problem. That's where I'm at now. I've been back and forth on this numerous times over the years, but I feel pretty confident that I think this is the right, just have to watch the playing of words, that's all. Don't change the meaning of words. That's all.
And it sounds like what you're saying, going along with what you said earlier, is that you also then can bring it back into the proper jurisdiction if someone tries to.
Correct.
Turn it into something.
Make the argument, call it a fraud for what it is. It won't hold up. And particularly, let's say the one of the inalienable and unalienable, let's go to the Black's Law Dictionary. Let's look there. Let's go to Bouvier's Dictionary. What is some judge making a change of that word, you know, in 1980 or whatever year that case was in? It was a more, it could have been 2000, I don't know. But, you know, the judge changed the meaning of a word inside of his court case, and we're going to be able to apply that in order to say you could take someone's rights away from them. And that there is the argument, you know. And again, it's a fraud. So no matter how you go about it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you so much.
Okay, let's take our next person. Thank you. Let's see. We have, looks like, what's your first name? It looks like you're coming from Michigan.
This is Candace. Can you hear me?
Candace, yes. Are you from Michigan? Am I?
I am, yeah.
Okay, go right ahead. You got the mic.
Thank you. I have some more organization questions. We're starting up a committee of safety in our county, and I wondered regarding having a treasurer. Mm-hmm. In passing the hat, like, is this a loose acknowledgement of covering expenses and keeping record only of that? Or is there a requirement to do a DBA or some type of
organization? Oh, we're not corporate. We're the people. We don't do those things. It has nothing to do with us. That's fiction. We're real. You know, we're reality.
Okay.
You collect what you need to collect, and, you know, usually you pass. It depends on what you decide to do. You might decide to do dues, okay? Or you might just pass the hat every meeting. I mean, whatever you do. And someone has to hold that money. I would hold it in cash. I wouldn't put it necessarily in the bank, at least not today. I wouldn't trust banks. But, you know, someone holds the money, and you got to keep an accounting of it. It should be counted at the end of the meeting. You know, the can should be tipped over and counted, and everybody gets it. You make a record of it. You know, everybody hears the record being made. The next meeting, what happens is you give a report of what's in the kitty, so to speak, what's in the treasury, and everybody gives their report at the beginning of a meeting. That's how, you know, the order is supposed to go. You have numerous different sub-committees, and each one has a very short, update of where they're at, what they're doing, what they've accomplished, and what they're going to try to accomplish by the next meeting. So that little report comes in at the beginning of your meeting. For all the subcommittees, treasury is the same thing. And remember, you know, at some point in time, you may have to pay for a place. It depends on what you settle up. You can go to libraries. You can go to the Rod and Gun Club. If you can get them to work with you, they won't charge you. Otherwise, they will charge you. You can go to town halls. But if you really become big, where you have hundreds and hundreds of people. Well, then you'll have to rent the place or figure something out. But the thing is you'll have hundreds and hundreds of people. So you'll be collecting money from hundreds and hundreds of people. And everybody will have to realize, well, this is what's going to cost to run things. You know, we all need to be given in maybe $10 a month in order to support what we're doing. But again, as you grow, more people will be coming, more money will be putting into the till, so that really shouldn't grow that much of a burden on anybody specifically with something that they can't afford. But whatever we got to do, we got to do. So.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to make sure as we start this up that we're doing it properly. I wondered also, are there NLA bylaws, and if so, are they on the website somewhere?
Well, we have written something up here. We're hoping to get a lot more organized than what we are, and we're looking for money. And if we find money, we have to really become organized, because then at that point, if we get some big dollars, we'll have to hire an accountant to deal with the money and write the checks and handle that, so it's kind of separate from the people involved here. Give it to a professional who will take care of that business. And then give an accounting, you know, we'd have to give an accounting every 3 months, what kind of money has come in, what we spent it for, all those things will have to be done. Right now we don't do anything like that because we're not getting lots of money, you know, we're getting $5
right.
Here, $5 there. Sometimes people give a nice dollar bill here, you know, $1,000 here or there, you know, that comes in from time to time. But we do have here is, let's see if where this is at, I think it's under here somewhere. No. I know we have something written up. Oh, I remember where it's at. I think it's under today's issues. Hang on a second.
Okay.
This is too big. Let's get this. We're going to try to fix this problem where this thing falls off the bottom of the page, you know.
Right.
I think it's under this one here. Hang on.
The reason I asked was I was wondering if there are restrictions per se on like officers being unable to be people who are like elected to a political party or government employee. Are there some safety guideline protections for we the people within the organization.
You're talking about elections within the organization?
No, I'm talking about elected people outside of the organization. The
people that you want to help get elected.
No. For instance, say the county Republican Party has some people who got elected to the executive committee, or they
They're fiction. They're fiction. They're part of the statutory process created by the Bar Association to take the political process away from the people. We're breaking away from that. We're not doing that. If you got a committee of safety, you are the real, true committeeman, free and independent. You don't get elected. You step up and have the right to be able to have government by consent and participate with that. And you can't refuse anyone from doing that. Number one. So you can't restrict the numbers and say, for instance, in my county, the Republican committee allows for 149 committeemen, because there's 149 seats. Sometimes they may put two people in a particular election district, and that's usually done because maybe they're shortchanged somewhere else or whatever. But nevertheless, they get the 149 people, and that's it. Nobody else can come in. Well, that's not the way government by consent works. All of us can participate. You can have 1,000 committeemen in your county. You can have 5,000. Anybody who wants to join and participate, join and participate. That's it. We're not statutory. Okay, we're not part of the statutory process, and we're not part of the fiction. We're free and independent. We're the people. We're reality. And that's how you got to kind of view this. And that's how our founding fathers viewed it. They didn't have an elected committeeman back then. They were the people, you know, we have government not by the majority, but by the majority that participates. That's what Jefferson said. And so, you know, you participate because you want to participate, and you can't be restricted or restrained from doing it. So that would be a restriction if you had to get voted in and you couldn't get voted in because someone else was voted in ahead of you. And it doesn't make no sense. Look, they want minimum amount of people. They want only enough people to be able to be enslave them, to walk the papers, to get their criminals into office. That's all they want. So they restrict things to a certain point. We want to bring as many people as possible up for a potential election, people who are you know, going to be statesmen, who's going to study the Constitution and obey the law, which is the Constitution. So that's what we want, and that's what we do. There's no restriction to what we can do. And when you don't know what to do, you make it up. We're free and independent. You know, it just has to be just and right. It has to be logical. You know, it has to make common sense. So you can make these things up as you go, you know. But we have put together a structure, of course, and you can find that under the Starter Committee of Safety. But the page we have here that may be helpful, what you're looking for us, we got a Help Wanted page. And in here, we wrote up, you know, what we need right now. I know that we have about 14 or 15 people that have volunteered over the past weeks to help out, and Jan's been collecting that information. And I don't know if he's got an email out yet to those people, but we talked about that. And if he hasn't, we'll get one out soon, where the people are going to want to check off what kind of work that they feel that they would like to do or they're capable of doing. And remember, we're all learning. So, you know, we can learn. You're a good learner, and you want to get involved in something you don't have experience in, but you perceived you can learn it. Well, then fine. We'll train you.
Well, I think I asked my question a little bit incorrectly, too. Thankfully, I asked it of somebody else who's on the line and listening. So they sent me my original question, which is, can an elected official of the county be an officer of the COS? That's the actual question.
Well, I don't know that you want to call them officers. You know, with the people, I always stick with the people. Yeah, you do have a chairman, you do have a treasurer, you do have a secretary, you know, you have those things. Mm-hmm. And you do have a co-chair. So if the chairman isn't there, the co-chair picks up things. When you come to meetings, especially depending on what kind of a committee it is, the subcommittees or political committees, you want a chairman and a co-chairman, because maybe they can't make it to certain meetings that combine with other counties. And, you know, when you go in an election for someone, an assemblyman or a congressman or something like that, Anybody that is an individual that is, elected, they can come to your committee of safety meetings, and they can also be a member. I don't see a conflict of interest in that. I don't think you'd want them to be the chairman or anything like that, but they can be just a regular member like most of us are.
Okay.
And participate and help and do whatever it is. We're the people, and they're the people, and we're working together. Let's get to know them.
Okay.
That's good, too. And let me suggest very strongly, we're going to make this point more and more stronger as we organize better and hopefully get some funding so that we can become professional and really get some serious organization going here, far more than superior than what we already have. Anybody that wants to participate, just send an email to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org, attention Jan, and just say, hey, I'd like to help, and these are my skills, and he'll send you an email eventually that will give a check-off list, and you'll check off of things you want to do. So anybody that wants to do that, please, help us out. Did I answer that question altogether now?
You did. You did. I actually think I didn't ask it quite correctly. I got off track. So member, yes, but like chair, not to be a chair.
Yeah, not to be the leader in the leadership itself. And once they're out of office, then they could become the leadership if that's what they, if that's what the people want and they want. You know, but you guys will figure those things out. The other thing, as far as us at this point, we do have goals. I mean, people can come and read this. Look at these are some of the things we're looking for people to help us with. Okay. This here is we need district leaders. We broke the United States up into 10 districts. We need district leaders to help us there, to help organize and communicate with all the committees of safety. We kind of will review these people as, to some degree, as our committee, National Liberty Alliance's committee of correspondence amongst the 3,000 plus counties out there. And again, our purpose is just to feed information and counsel in any way we can to individuals who are building their committees of safety. But anyway, after that, here is our goals, okay? This is what we expect of our national leaderships, of all our leaders. And this is some of the duties of the district coordinators, okay? Here's where our meeting agendas should be, kind of formed and created. National coordinators and different meetings that take place, and we have some of the meetings in, as we've been developing all this, we've had meetings and it's been leadership meetings of the past. You can listen in on those if you want. Getting down to more details of us as a organization, once real money comes in, we're going to go more different focus. Well, NLA is already a trust, so that's what it is. We'll work things out as we go along, but we don't have that kind of money right now to worry about it. As far as
I appreciate your answering my questions, because as we start this up, we want to make sure that we're not veering away from the goals and purposes of the NLA, and so it helps.
You're free and independent. We do hope that you keep the framework, because maintaining the framework that we created makes us integratable with each other. You know, we are one county to another county, and if you pick up and move to another state and you join in, you'll be understanding what's going on because everything's the same. So the structure we hope everyone keeps. You know, one of the things I saw, and there's a constitution, I'm trying to remember, I think it was Alabama. There's like hundreds and hundreds of pages I saw on that, if I recall. I'll take a look at that in a minute, but I think it's hundreds of pages in their constitution. But some of their constitutions, especially the ones written later, you know, the states that came in late, especially in the 20th century particularly, in the later part of the 19th century, the constitutions were not as well written as the earlier constitutions, although they are all pretty good and they got a lot of stuff, but there's a lot of stuff that's null and void because it's repugnant to the United States Constitution. So there's some spoilage there, some poison that took place there. But again, we always have the yardstick of the U.S. Constitution in order to nullify anything in another constitution that's repugnant.
Thank the Lord, because Michigan's is horrible.
Yep.
So I appreciate your help. Thank you so much, John.
Okay, thank you. Hey, Gerard, do you want to take the controls here? Hello, Gerard. If you're talking, you're muted. I guess he stepped away. All right, we'll take our next caller. Let's see, next question. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? We only have two people in here now. So, next question is from Jeff. What state are you from, Jeff?
This is actually Jeff's wife, Christina. But that's
hello, Jeff's wife, Christina.
That's okay. We're from Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. Go right ahead, Christina.
Okay, so I had a couple of questions, so I don't mean to hog up too much time, but I just wanted to tail on the end of talking about the committees of safety. In the end, like with the goal, with the going across the whole nation and through all of the counties, what's like the biggest goal of the committee in general? Is it just to be able to like demand and remove these frauds, or like what's the biggest?
100% control of our courts and our political process. That's the goal. 100%, not 99, not 99.9. Not 99.99, no, 100%. Government by consent is control. That means the people control it. We've given authority. We've vested certain powers to our, you know, the two houses on the federal level, and of course we have the state assembly and the state senators and so on and so forth. All these different positions, okay. But we've given them the criteria of where they have to operate within. For instance, let's look at the, let's take a look at our congressmen and our senators. Article 1 governs them and gives them the powers and the authorities that they have. They can't take any authority that we haven't given them. So if it's not listed in there, for instance, Congress was given listed 18 powers. Not 19 powers, 18 powers. Although some of these powers may have two or three different things going on in there, but the bottom line is there are 18 powers that were given to them. And so they can't operate anything outside of those powers. And all their legislation, as far as law is concerned, writing legislation, that all has to do with equity, which is controlling either commercial activity into interstate in the case of the United States, or it's controlling the different agencies and the individuals and the agents within those agencies. So that's the law that we gave them to write. We didn't give them the right to write any law that controls the people's behavior. That's God. We put ourselves under the law, which is under God's law, not man's law. Equity is what's called positive law. It's law created by man. That's what equity is. But it also refers to the use of equity really identifies with that what is just. It's a justice. So we're expecting to find justice in our equity. Even our equity should have been put together and considered through common law maxims. Okay, things that make common sense, things that is right and just. Those are the things. Now, the people had the final say on all that because if it comes into a courtroom in a criminal thing, you know, regulations and executing regulations and problems within different agencies and the administrative courts that control all that stuff, I mean, you know, it's not criminal, so it has nothing to do. We've given them that power and authority. And we trust that they're going to be just and right in exercising those things within the courts. But when it comes down to the criminal situation, if someone is broke a statute and then the statute was a situation where they actually broke the law and it becomes a criminal action, you know, at that point in time, they then have to come into a court of law. They're no longer in an equity court. They're in a court of law. But because that person was under equity, the regulations that they were operating under, the statutes they were operating under, apply to them. That's where potential nullification comes in by the jury. If the jury is hearing a case and they're applying certain things upon individuals, and the jury decides, hey, that statute was not very constitutional. It wasn't. It's not just. We're going to nullify it. or maybe in this case, maybe it is a just situation, but in this case it doesn't work. We don't like it, so we'll nullify it in this case. You see, that's the power of the people. Anything that's criminal is by the people. They have to come to the people and they have to get an indictment. And then once they get an indictment, then they got to come and to the people to make a decision, to decide both the law and also the facts, the facts and the law, and what the final judgment is to be, with an eye on restitution. But the whole courts are upside down. Remember, the bar attorneys have taken control of that. They've written their own laws. They've combined law and equity to call it civil law. We're now under Babylonian law. They apply statutes and regulations upon the people, not necessarily regulations, but statutes upon the people. That's all unlawful. They can't do that. But they're doing it because they got the controls, and we need to take it away from them. You have prosecutors, U.S. attorneys and prosecutors on the state level or county level, and they have taken control of going before a grand jury to get an indictment. Under common law, that's unlawful. The only ones that can go see a jury is the sheriff, the coroner, and in very rare cases, the people themselves. Okay, and if the people want to report a particular criminal act and they want to get it before the grand jury, just like the prosecutor, they have to take it to the sheriff. And the sheriff has to look at the evidence and what's going on and make a decision on whether he's going to continue exploring that. If he sees enough evidence that a crime has taken place, then he's going to go do some investigation and find out what's going on, help to collect more information, and when he feels he has enough to take that before the grand jury, then he will. Now remember, he's separated from the political system. He works directly for the people. No one controls him or should be controlling him, but they are being controlled, but they shouldn't be controlled. They should be the final lawmakers. And that's the way the process is. So we have tainted grand juries that these clowns say that they're going to get their ham sandwich from, and they do, because they have total control over these people. They also stack them with their questions, a lot of unlawful questions that they ask people that are on the jury, the grand jury. And the same thing with petit jury. The petit jury is controlled by the judge. He says, hey, you guys get to decide the facts and everything, but I get to tell you what the law is. And if they broke the law, I don't care about anything else. You got to find them guilty. See, now that's poisoning the jury. That's jury tampering. And the same thing, it's jury tampering when these prosecutors go in and they know damn well that these people aren't guilty of something. That happens all the time. The January 6th people, take a look at that. They held back evidence. If they would have allowed the jury to see that evidence, they couldn't have indicted, because there was no real crime. Were there individuals that created a riotous situation? Well, the whole thing wasn't a riot, but small groups of people was violent on that thing. And it turns out most of them were part of either Antifa or the FBI or other agents of government that were really enticing and getting this whole thing going. So, but again, going back to the idea of the juries, they're all tainted at this point. The people need to take control. The people need to decide, orientate the juries. That's why we're building administrations in every county to control those to orientate those juries. And there is a connection between that group and the committees of safety. So if they have a problem with an individual, there's four people plus one, five, one's a paralegal, but they're all five really are administrators. They should have the same education. Of course, paralegal will have a higher law education, of course. But the bottom line is, let's say one of them go rogue and the other three want to get rid of one of them. Well, they can make a vote to get rid of them, but then they probably should take it to their committee of safety, to the judiciary committee there, or even to the whole committee, and bring the case before them and get some confirmation on that. So and then they, of course, can get rid of a person that's not acting with a sense of, you know, justice and mercy. So anyway, we need to take control of it. That's what government by consent is. And again, being the real committee men, we put people in office. We can take them out of office. And if they break the law, we can indict them and pull them out of office that way, too.
What we've been doing is some count notices. We're working. I'm the one who wrote wrote in about the jury, the sheriff project, because of course that's the final thing is getting them on our side.
Right.
But in the meanwhile, we're writing notices. So like this week, I did one for a legislative bill that went in that is atrocious. It's called Community Immunity, and it's going to force every kid in the whole entire state to have vaccines with no exemptions like they did in California. So I did a notice against it, and at the bottom we did like a, and we've done multiple notices already, but, you know, we let them know that, you know, if they don't come back to us in XYZ amount of time, you know, this is what will happen, and we can choose the arbitrator of our choice, which I know that they technically have a right to a jury, but if they don't,
when
you
say notice, is notice and demand?
Yes, exactly.
Are you pulling their bonds and growth and their financials?
Say it again, I apologize.
The notice and demand is pulling their bonds, their oath and their financials? Is that
written? That was another question, because here in Massachusetts, we don't have bonds for any
of
our
everybody has a bond. Then they don't need to be in office no more. They have to give up their office, and you don't have anyone in office that they, none of them have bonds. Look, they tried to tell us that here in New York, telling us that the judges don't have bonds, and they played this game for a long time, and finally they admitted, well, okay, they do have bonds, but it's the people. What's happening is they're actually using the people's tax money in order to give them the bonds, and that's unlawful too. Okay,
right. Oh,
this is their bonds. We shouldn't be paying for any of that. So it's problematic. They get away with whatever they can, so it doesn't surprise me. But look, you have to understand the power when you deal with a board. It is important to get enough people behind you, because without enough people to give you that push, that clout, that power. You know, so, but you do what you got to do until you get enough people, what you can. But once you get enough people behind you, and you have a slew of people going to deal with, let's take a board of education. You're going in to deal with a particular board on a particular school in a particular, I guess, town or whatever, district, school district, I guess you call it. So you're dealing with a board, and you got some problems. You want to bring a real education in. You want to get rid of this communist movement that's in the school. There's a lot of changes you want to make. And I'm going to write a paper on this with exact details of what people can do. And again, people can use that and fudge it around and work it up however they want to work it. But the bottom line, at least I'll give them some framework and some ideas and some thoughts, and also recognize some of the problems. And so let's take getting rid of a problem in the school board. One of the things you want to do, and I'll even teach people how to do this, if you go into a particular school district, you can go down to real property. Real property is an office inside every county building. Okay, and we go in there, you ask for the real property office, and then you go up to the real property, they do all the mapping and everything, and they got the addresses, and everything's broken up into different districts, and, you know, all the people are living. You can get a runoff of labels, or you can get the runoff onto a thumb drive and then put it on your own labels, however you want to do it. But you can purchase this stuff, and it's relatively cheap. And I used to do it for business, to send out mail to people in certain areas for certain things. But anyway, it's broken up in many different ways. So you can get a list of all the people in a particular school district, for instance. So you get names and addresses of everybody who lives in a school district. And then you take that and you send a letter out, okay, to all the people in a particular school district and say, hey, look, we're going to be meeting to deal with problems within our school district here, and the meeting will be on a certain date at a certain time, and we hope you come, and let's bring a good education back to our children, however you want to write that letter. So you get your first meeting, and you bring them into the place where you're meeting at the Committee of Safety. So now they're going to be introduced to the Committee of Safety, number one. Number two, they are the parents of the children that are actually going to school, because those are the people that are really going to respond to that, and that's what you're looking for. So then now you discuss what your plan is. Look, they're teaching this, they're teaching that, they're teaching the other thing. We've got to get rid of that. They're not teaching this, they're not teaching that, and not teaching this. We need to put this in. What say you? You get a conversation going. You get an agreement going. Then you get you say, okay, well, look, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go down and see the board, and we're going to have a couple of speakers, and you know, let's collect the questions we want and the demands we have, and let's go in there in one accord, and we can have more than one or two speakers, but we do have to have at least one major speaker that really kind of brings everything into order, brings the situation to the board. So you go into the board. Now you have all these people. There's going to be standing room only, okay? This is going to put the fear of the people into their hearts, and it better. And if it doesn't, you're going to show them how they're going to now fear you. So you go in there, you lay the things out, you say, here are the problems, we are the people, this is our school district, this is what we want, this is what you're going to do, you work for us, you're the servant, we're the masters. And then as you go through that, and let's say they resist you, okay? Well, then you have a paper in your back pocket. You know the names of all these people that, all right, thanks. You have the names of all these people that are on the boards. And you write up a notice and demand for each one of them. And you're demanding their oaths, their bonds, and their financials. Okay? And then if they're not going to do the right thing, then the people that are problematic, then you serve right there. Matter of fact, it'd be a good idea if you have the sheriff or one of the deputies in it actually do the serving. That'll be a little more powerful. So you got a lot of organizing to do to get to this point, but you need to get to this point, you know? And but in any event, you then serve the papers on to them. They got 10 days to either come up with all these things and with their oath, their bonds, and their financials, or they give up their office, okay? And we'll let someone else put someone else in there, whatever the process is to get a new person on the board. Now, are you going to obey the people? Because you're going to remove them too. Now, they may say, oh, we don't have bonds. We don't have to have bonds. Well, then you just lost your office because every office requires a bond. That's the law. That's the law of the land, period. End of subject, nothing to talk about.
That's the Constitution.
This is the power and the authority of the people. Now, worst case, worse, if you have to, you can pull into the state court and go for enforcement.
Okay. Because I actually did that well before Bonds for the Win came out. I used Rick Martin's website, and mm-hmm. I served my school board, and that's how I really, like, got onto this. And it kind of dropped because, you know, our state actually has laws that say who has bonds and who doesn't. They have it in their laws. And so I wound up going and getting all the insurance information for the school and yada, 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 but we still have a whole bunch of meatballs.
Well, I wish Gerard was here because he's got more knowledge of this, and he's worked as, I think it was a councilman or something. And Gerard, are you here? Hello? Yeah, he's probably away from the computer. I don't know what he's doing, but he's not there. Maybe bring this up another time when Gerard's around and on the mic because, you know, he talked about this, and there are some situations where they come in collectively for this or something. And I don't remember or recall exactly what it is, but anyway, they have to have some kind of a bond. Somewhere they got to have this backup. It's an insurance policy, ultimately. I mean, you can't drive a car without having insurance, or you shouldn't, because you could be in big trouble if you injure someone or kill somebody. But it's the same thing with giving someone power and authority. They need some kind of an insurance on them. If they do something wrong, you know, they got to pay for the injuries, and they got to, you know, deal with that problem. So they have to restore the person.
To the whole just having, because it was just me, the single mommy, talking to everybody, trying to teach them. And I helped one mom at, like, our Voke school do the same thing. But, right, you do need a whole support system and backing. So
absolutely. And you want to get as many people as possible to learn as much of the law as they can. And that's why the course we're running here is for that purpose, because people need to understand the law. Remember, you know, your heritage is in the law. You can't know your heritage without the law. Okay, because we're under the law. Our unalienable rights comes from the Creator, and we put ourselves under His law, and our liberties are found in the law and protected by the law. So our heritage is the law, and our inheritance is liberty. And how can you protect your liberty, and how can you know a lot of liberties that people don't even realize they have? How can you know these things unless you know your heritage, you know the law? So that's the purpose of our law class. It's court access in the common law. And so as many people as possible should get into that course. And remember, if you got five or six people that's in that course or has gone through that course in your committee of safety, when they put their five heads together, you're going to be able to pull out a lot of knowledge together and a lot of processes and things you can do. And remember, there's enforcement for everything. Okay? And And we're going to be teaching that in the course. Enforcement is part of the course. So
that was one of my questions, John. So I know that you're in like a couple of weeks into this class. Do you think it's, well, to have a group together, or when did you start the next class? Because I think I can get a group together for the next
class.
Well,
we're doing this on Saturdays at 12 noon, and we've been going quite long. I really wanted to do it within 2.5 hours, but we end up The last session we had was 2 hours and 10-15 minutes, and then we did a open forum, which went another hour, so usually ends up to be about 3 hours or so. But in any event, we've done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We've done 6 sessions already. We just moved into chapter 2, but it's all recorded. Are you on a computer or are you on a?
Yeah, and I've actually listened to your Rumble channel for a while, so I do feel like some of them pop up there here and there. Yes.
Yeah. Well, look at if you look here on the desktop here that I'm showing, you come down to Court Access in the Common Law. That's what you click on that to get into the course. For instance, you click on this, and you'll get the instructions and information to get into the course. Now, on the same thing, once you join the course and you get through the registration process, then these 2 pages will show up. These won't show up for anyone that's not in the course. Only people in the course. The first one is all the recorded videos of the course. So you click on that. And so you can come in and you can go introduction part A, and you could just start watching the course right here. It's a video course,
okay.
Which you can. It's the same thing as if it's live.
The
only difference is you'll hear the open forum at the end, but you won't participate in the open forum. But people taking the course, they can come here on a Monday night and ask their questions. So there's an open forum every Monday night anyway. So that's the thing you could do. It doesn't matter when you join the course. You can join the course a year from now, and all this will be available. And it'll be available indefinitely, and anything I learned new will be added on to this. And under education, under the same place, you have the table of contents. And this is all the information in the course, the tools, and all the documents and the documentations. And, you know, each chapter is broken up. We've got lots and lots of things that we're covering. We're covering a lot of information and a lot of stuff. And anybody that takes this real serious and does their homework, because we don't give marks or anything, you get out of whatever you want. And people who really put a lot of time in this and really are involved and really want to be good in the court, you'll be excellent. You just need to spend the time in it. So the more time you spend in it, the better you're going to be. And, of course, people don't have a lot of time. They only have a little time. They move at their own pace. It doesn't matter. But we are right now in Chapter 2, which is the pleadings. We did our first session on pleadings. Okay, so that's where we're at right now. So if you wanted to jump into the live, you could, but you do have to get back here and get into the earlier stuff that you missed.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Yeah, okay. I think that our group, we're doing things all sporadic on this end, similar stuff, but definitely not as in-depth, and we should probably just hop in and get going with a committee of
Absolutely.
Safety.
Remember, many hands make light work, so many minds make light necessity of knowledge. Look at, you will figure, the more and more people you have, the more ability you will have to figure your problems out, because you're going to put a lot of minds together, you know, and everybody's going to have a little bit of this and a little bit of that. The people who join the judicial committee, they're going to be focused more into the law. They're going to be able to advise a lot. You have the people in the political committee, they're going to focus in on the political process, not the politicking, because we don't deal with politicking. We don't deal with parties. Parties are destructive to a republic. It doesn't work with a republic. Parties only work with a democracy, and parties are used in order to bring you into an oligarchy, and that's what they've done. They've turned us into a democracy, and they brought us into an oligarchy. But in any event, people who are in this committee, on the educational committee, that's where their focus is going to be. That's where their knowledge is going to be. So you'll have all these different committees. You have the Committee of Correspondence, okay? So you have all these different committees that you're going to create. As you get more and more people, you'll be able to create more and more committees. And then you become more powerful. You're going to be known. Eventually, you're going to visit every government authority within your county. You're going to eventually visit them all, okay? You're going to visit the county level. You're going to do the town levels, the village levels. Take time to get through this whole process. But by the time you finish that, they're all going to know who you are. They're all going to fear you. And remember, you need to have them to fear you or even participate with you, because they can join in. You invite them over to the Committee of Safety. Hey, come join us. Work with us, you know? But in any event, when people fear the government, you have tyranny. When the government fears the people, that's when you have liberty.
Perfect. Mm. Thank you, John.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's take our next caller. Gerard, you here? Bob, what state you from?
I'm from Texas.
Okay, we're going to stick to one question at a time here because we got about 20 minutes left, and I want to try to get everyone in. We got about six people in the queue. Bob from Texas, what's your question? With a follow-up if necessary, but go ahead.
Okay. I want to say that you give me a lot of hope. I love your website. I printed out most of that stuff and compiled it in a big, fat notebook. But my question is since the first sentence of U.S. law and the first sentence of the Bible refer to the same subject, why do we ignore those laws for which no human laws should be suffered to contradict?
Okay, why do we what?
We are ignoring the very essence and foundation of our U.S. law.
Absolutely.
And that is, and all of our legislators and everybody's energy is attacking all the issues without making sure that they conform with the principles. And those principles are, you know, the first sentence refers to the laws of nature, which is creation, and the laws of nature's God, which is the Bible.
Right.
And we're doing a lot of things.
And that's in the Declaration of Independence, but go ahead. Yep, you're right.
It's on page one of our county law library.
Oh, okay.
And so it just seems that we are surrendering our most powerful weapon.
Well, absolutely. Look at our heritage is in the law. If you don't know the law, you won't really know your liberty, and you don't really know how to defend it. And that's a big, big problem. We have lots of things in our education. We have lots of videos that cover different things. But I would suggest here, you know, again, I'm sure you were here when I was talking a little while ago, so I don't have to go too deep into this. But we have under today's issues Anarchy USA, okay? This is so important to go through. People, when you have time, it may take days or even a week or two to go through all this stuff, but you need to go through it because it's gonna give you an understanding of exactly what has been going on and how they did it. And what we need to do, you know, once you understand that, you know, we have the answers of these problems here at National Liberty Alliance through particularly the Committees of Safety. You know, we have government by the consent of the people. So people have to consent to government. You consent to government through the Committees of Safety, taking control of the political and the judicial process. Now, under education, we have topical, I think it's under topical. Let me see where this is at. But we have a lot of videos. There's lots of videos in this whole section here. It's full of videos and audios. But there is one here, American History. No, it's not it. Educational videos. Okay, here's one. Okay, this will give you a lot of good information on this and what Abraham Lincoln said about our founding fathers and slavery. An extremely important video to look into. And we have another one on the slavery on the other page that we're looking at, which I cover in Anarchy USA. We have a thing on slavery, our founding fathers and slavery. We need to understand who we are as a people, where we come from. These different PowerPoint videos really cover a lot of the earlier stuff, and we did one on Christianity. There's no doubt we are a Christian nation. Anybody who says anything different has no clue of history, no understanding, they're ignorant of history, and that's it. We have to stand on that because the enemy wants to destroy our Christianity. You know, when the Jews were wandering in the wilderness, going back into the days of Moses there, there were people who wanted to, you know, as they moved for the 40 years wandering, they moved through many, many places, and they stopped off here and camped out there. And people local to those areas would come and visit, and some of those people, you know, decided to kind of connect with them and live with them. And everybody was welcome. They didn't care, but just respect our law because this is who we are as a people, and this is what gives us our liberty. You know, because Moses brought the law, and the people had the Lord, and they, you know, we are really developed as the Jews were developed, so were we, especially when they came into the Promised Land. That's what our country, our nation was built upon, but we're built upon, of course, that which is the law and Christianity. But we did do a PowerPoint video. Here's one on democracy versus republic, extremely important. Here's a seminar that we did. It's on our front page also. Our founding fathers and slavery in America. Writ mandamus we sent to the U.S. Supreme Court. The American Bar Association and the abrogation of the common law. Amendment 2, virtues, America's foundation. America, a common law nation. The county sheriff. The County Committee of Safety, and I'm surprised I didn't see Christianity in here, but it is on the site. Maybe it's on another place. It could be over here. We have a lot of videos throughout this whole site, so people should kind of poke around and see what's going on, and you know, watch a lot of these videos. And Christianity, I'm sure you'll follow. You'll find on our Rumble page. Let me see. Where's my Rumble page here? Here it is. Okay, go to the Rumble page. We should have Christianity in here, I'm pretty sure. Well, I know we do. Slavery. A lot of the stuff that is throughout the website I put here, and of course we then embed it into our website. So you can get a lot of these things just going to our Rumble page and watch it from there. And you can watch a lot of all of our stuff. Court access in the common law, mandate, enforcement, proper education, public schools, nurturing morons. This is pretty sad here. Sovereign citizen movement, police brutality, Southern Poverty Law Center, problem with them. There's some leadership meetings. Anyway, if you go through these, you'll find Christianity. We are a Christian nation. So anyway, lots of videos, great education. Just kick back and enjoy a video. Get a cup of coffee or something.
I've been going through this for quite a while, and my background's in chemistry, and I've got a lot of reference, science. People have referenced my publications and stuff, and I try to boil it down to the essence of what we're doing, just like E=mc². And what I'm saying is, in the very first sentence on page one of the entirety of U.S. law, it says, no human laws should be suffered to contradict creation or the Bible.
Why we are not using that.
Everybody swears an oath to protect and defend the Constitution, which was written to protect those fundamental principles, and that is creation and the Bible.
I would agree 100% with that. And the problem again is ignorance. I mean, I speak to myself first. I was ignorant, and now I no longer am. I know the problems, and I see the solutions. And people need to learn the problems and find the solutions and work to correct this problem. But what you're reading and where you're getting that, wherever you're getting that from, you'd mention a source, but that really ultimately brings us right to the Declaration of Independence, because everything you said is in the Declaration of Independence. Well, under the law of God, ultimately, the Declaration of Independence is a covenant with God that we the people made with God. In order to receive his blessings and live under his law, we'd be happy to do that, because then we get the blessings of liberty. Now, we haven't been very good at this over the past couple of hundred years, but also at the same time, remember, you know, the enemy has been in the gates from the very beginning, and they have taken control, and we've become subjected to them. But they're about to be taken out, and we'll have that opportunity to turn. Remember God says, if my people that are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray, I will forgive their sins and heal their land. I'm paraphrasing it, but that's generally what it says. And that's what we have to acknowledge. We have to acknowledge the God of the Bible, however we perceive him. And everyone doesn't have to acknowledge it, okay? But those people that are taking control, okay, generally speaking, were under the Christian morality, under the morality of the Bible, the Judeo-Christian And so that's where we got to put our focus, because that's where we find our liberty, that's where we find our law, and that's where common law comes from. And anybody who denies that, then they're going to have something else other than what our founding fathers gave us. So, yeah, we've wandered so far away from that. It's time to go back home.
Right. And everybody that swore an oath has to protect those to make sure that they are not contradicted. And
absolutely.
My question is why are we ignoring the very cornerstone of the foundation of all of our laws? And if anything conflicts with creation or the Bible, then whoever wrote the law or, you know, violated that, then they should be impeached or removed from office.
Absolutely. And the Bible, I'll answer that with the Bible. The hearts of men are desperately wicked. Who could know it? That's why when we come under God's law, and with that God's law comes morality, and then we come under that morality, and we train up our children on how to walk. We train them up in morality. We train them up in law. We bring them a proper education. And God promises you bring a child up like that, when he's older, he will not depart from that, or she. And so that's where we got to get to, is to bring it back into our educational system, bring it back into our minds, bring it back to the realization, if we don't bend our knee to the law, then we have no law at all. We're lawless too. And we're not going to get the blessings of liberty, and we don't deserve it. And we're not going to be a moral people. Look, they have worked to destroy our education. They have destroyed our religion. They have destroyed our judicial process. They have destroyed our political process. They have destroyed everything. We've been brought into slavery, ultimately, to this New World Order. And the minions of this New World Order is the Bar Association, okay, and the Deep State is the enforcer of all this stuff. And we got a big mess, and it's about to be put back together for us, but now it's up to the people to take it back and take control and have government by consent and bend the knee to our Creator again and pray for His mercy and have... For his liberty, unalienable rights, his blessings of liberty. And remember, the Constitution in the preamble, the very beginning of the preamble, right inside that preamble, it says part of government's job is to secure what? The blessings of liberty. Okay, so it's spoken about in the Declaration of Independence, which is the foundation of our law, and the Constitution, which is the law for our servants to obey, and law and equity is to control. Equity controls our commercial interstate, and also the commercial, which is interstate commercial activity, and government agencies and agents, and all of that is under equity. But we, the people, and everybody is under law, and that law brings us right back to the law of the Bible.
Absolutely, and that's my question. Why are we not focused on that for everybody? Just because they violate the law doesn't make it law.
Are you saying why isn't National Liberty Alliance and us not focused on that, or generally the people themselves are not focused on that?
I'm talking about all the people and everybody we elect. You know, they're approaching these laws.
That's why we have to have government by consent, and again, you know, these courses we're putting up here on National Liberty Alliance, we've got, I don't know, six courses. I don't even remember how many we got up here. But we need to require our servants, those people that we want to elect and support to get them into government, they need to come out here and learn the Constitution. They need to get a proper education, and that's what National Liberty Alliance is offering, a proper education. And so they need to come here to get that. And that's what the committees of safety, you know, when you get someone that wants to run for office and they're looking for your support, because they will find you once you establish yourself, they're going to know, these are the people I need to go to get my papers walked, to get me on the ballot. These are the guys. So when they come to you to ask for that, then you start quizzing them a couple of questions about the Constitution. And you don't want to embarrass them, but, you know, you want to find out what's going on. And when you realize they don't know what's going on, you let them know, look, we'll support you if you are willing, A, to honor and obey the Constitution, okay? And more importantly, you need to understand that. So you need to go to National Liberty Alliance and take the courses. Now, we will set up a special certificate for that so that you'll know that these people took the courses. We haven't set that up yet, but we will set that up. And now they know the law. Now they know what's expected of you. And now you're going to elect them, put them into office, and you're expecting that they're going to be obedient. And you let them know if you break the rules, if you break the law by not obeying the law that we've given you, and not overstepping your jurisdiction or your authority. If you break any of those things, we will take you out as fast as we put you in. You can do a recall within 90 days. You're going to have anyone pulled out of office. You know, so.
That's, you know, I'm just trying to make it as simple as possible.
Right.
That is the foundation of our law, and I can't think of any.
Well, people like don't obey anything because they don't know it. That's the problem. Ignorance. Look at I get disgusted every day, numerous times a day, because I listen to this or listen to that here or there, and every day somewhere I see someone that's in office, someone that has power and authority, and they think we're a democracy. And we're talking everybody. I can't think of anyone that really in office that understands we are a republic. We are not a democracy. Our founding fathers did not create a democracy. They despised the democracy. What's his name? Benjamin Franklin summed it up this way: democracy is two wolves and a lamb deciding on what to have for dinner, and a republic is a well-armed lamb contesting the vote. Okay, and that's the difference between a democracy, and a democracy always fails. Our founding father spoke about that. There's about three or four places in the Federalist Papers where our founding father spoke about the destructiveness of democracy. Particularly, I think it's number 10, Federalist Paper.
Right.
10.
Right. Democracy is mentioned 13 times in the Federalist Papers, and it's always as a warning to avoid it, talking about how bloody and short-lived it is. So the thing is, the people we have elected swore an oath to protect and defend the Constitution. And if they don't know that, you know, a Republican form is the only written guarantee in the Constitution, Article 4, Section 4, you know, they need to be removed from office.
Absolutely. But first you have to see if they're willing to comply, okay, and learn, okay? And if they're not willing to comply and then not willing to learn and they're not taking the steps to do that, then you can let it be known we're taking you out. But remember, we have to get ourselves together. We got to get ourselves educated. We got to form ourselves together in our counties. And we have to create all the necessary committees. We have to get enough membership into that committee so that we have the power and the authority to be able to do everything we want to do, because you know a dozen people can't do this on themselves. We need 50, 100, 200 people in a county working. And let me tell you, one of the things you need to do, and let me ask everyone here to do the same thing here with National Liberty Alliance, you get your committees of safety going, and after every meeting you build up the idea in everybody's mind again over and over every meeting. Look at, you come into the next meeting, this is the date, this is the time, everybody bring a guest. Bring someone to be introduced to what we're doing. Get them out to the website. On the front page of our website, they can watch a seminar, okay? National Liberty Alliance's plan to save our republic government by consent. This was recorded in December of 2021. So right here, they can get orientated to what we're doing and what they'd be doing in the county. So you get them to watch that. First you get them to a meeting, get them excited, then you get them to watch that, and then they start working with you, and we all start learning and developing and doing the things we need. But if you got 20 people in a meeting, and everybody can bring one person, some people more, some people maybe nobody, but some people more. But if you could bring 20 new people the next week, you now have 40 people, potentially speaking. And if those 40 people continue in, and they go out and get another 40 people, now you got 80 people. So, you know, the numbers, you know how the numbers work. The thing is well, that's how you grow. And we're asking everyone here, bring someone to the Monday night meeting here. Get them introduced to National Liberty Alliance. Bring them to the website. Get them connected.
You know, it's a fantastic website. I don't think it requires a whole bunch of people. One of the things that I do is I bet the people that are going to be on the ballot before they're actually voted on.
Absolutely.
So,
but you're going to find almost all of them have no clue of the Constitution, so you're going to have to help them along. The question is, are they willing? And then they got to prove that they did it, because we'll give certificates here on the website once they get to the course, because we monitor the courses. Okay, the only course, we don't know whether people are taken or not, is really the law course. It's up to them to do what they have to do. We're not giving any tests or anything on it. And the other thing, the only other course that doesn't have any testing in it is the foundation course. Okay, so the foundation study is just a series of videos to kind of prime the people to prepare them for really the other studies and an introduction to a lot of the problems and what's going on. But all these other courses, they're monitored and marked as they go through. And once they get through the course, we know, and then they just ask for a certificate, and we can give them a certificate of completion, and that proves that that they had gone through the course. So that's what we need to do. Most people don't have a clue of the Constitution. They don't have a clue of a lot of things, and they need to learn.
Okay, one last thing, and that's what one person can do, and that is, you know, vetting the people that are going to be on the ballot. What I do is I make up sample ballots and with the people that I endorse. And for each election, I probably hand out over 1,000 ballots to the jury pools on Mondays and Tuesdays for 4 weeks before the election. And those, the ones that I endorse on those ballots are the ones that have demonstrated that they know the foundation of our U.S. law, that they are Christians, Protestants. 98.5% of our founders were Protestants. And
remember, we're not going to give them a religious test. I mean, we do want to get Christians involved, but they could be an atheist too. The key thing is this: do they agree with our law and who we are as a people? Don't try to change it. This is the Constitution. Leave it alone. This is who we are. If you're happy to live with this and work with that, fine, let's go. Because they don't have to be a Christian to apply it. And through that process, you know, the possibility of redemption is there also. So, because they'll be around the Christian attitude, you know.
John, we need to move on.
I know, we do have to move on.
Okay.
All right, well, conversation. I appreciate it, Bob. We're going to have to close down, as a matter of fact, because it's 8 minutes after. I got to go pick my son up for work.
Can you talk to John?
John, thank you for all you do.
Sure, I could talk with John. Let's take the next one. John from
Michigan.
Michigan. Yep. John, go ahead. You got the mic.
Yeah, just a quick one. Is it possible or allowable for somebody in a different county to be in a committee of safety in the neighboring county? Is there any problem with that?
Yeah, it is. I don't see a problem with that. I don't know why they'd want to be in a different county, though. Maybe for a while and then eventually hop into their own.
Yeah. Well, I'm right next door to Darlees County. I want to be in that county's committee of safety.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. And even with the administrators for the juries, they don't have to live in the county they work. Who knows? Maybe just right across the river, go across the bridge, and there's maybe the county courthouse there, and opposed to maybe the other side of the county that you're living in. So, but you don't have to live in the county that you're working in. And that's the same thing with the committees of safety. You can work in other counties. And I would encourage that, at least because they can learn and build some skills as they're trying to get other people from their county into the committee of safety and then eventually break off and get a committee of safety going in their own counties. So, but whatever they want to do, we're free and independent people. We do whatever we want.
As long as it's
just and right. That's the only thing.
We're firing Michigan up here, so we just watch this up here. But good. Hey, let's get off this call. We're too late. So.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We're going to have to end it. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll take Michael because let's see. Michael, you got the mic. One question, make it kind of quick, and go right ahead.
Okay, John. About the oaths and the bonds concerning community of safety, going to a county sheriff for bad behavior or going to a school board for bad behavior, and disqualification of bonds. You answered the question because I was thinking, okay, we're going to recall those people if they're in bad behavior, and we will reelect a new person that will obey the Constitution in the next election. But
right.
You brought up the recall 90 days. What's the significance in that 90 days?
That's how long it takes the process to go through the Board of Elections to set everything up and go through the ballots to get the recall onto the ballot and to recall the individual.
They could remain in that position for 90 days.
Unfortunately. But if they've broken the law or anything, then you can take them to the jury to get rid of them. Grand jury, get an indictment.
Okay. Gotcha. That answers my question.
Okay. Right.
The only thing I jotted down here was the deterioration of the Constitution through unlawful amendments to destroy the organic Constitution. That's a process that's happening too.
Mm-hmm. I missed the tail end of what you said. Say that again.
Well, the unlawful amendment process is by their attacking the organic Constitution, that's a process that's also happening.
Yeah, we got to be very careful. But fortunately, we're in pretty good shape. I think there are some things that are, you got the 16th Amendment, which needs to, be nullified. We can nullify it. We don't have to go through the Constitution, have a constitutional convention to do that or anything. It could be nullified and we could do that through the courts because it's repugnant to the Constitution. 17th Amendment also breaks the balance of power, and that destroys the entire Constitution. Plus, it leaves some hanging statements in there that denies the 17th Amendment also. So, those things have to be fixed, and we are working on those particular problems. So you got the 16th Amendment and the 17th Amendment particularly, which are problematic and needs to be dealt with. Also, the reinstatement of the original 13th Amendment and the combining of what we know as the 13th and the 14th Amendment together as one in the 14th Amendment. And again, I don't know exactly how that's going to be accomplished. We do work with the GR, with Republic Review, and he's working through trying to get the states together to have a Republic Review of legislation on a federal level and to get rid of anything without changing the Constitution, without having a constitutional convention. Let's review it and let's remove the unlawful stuff. So that is a process that GR is working on. And you can get information on him and his site and what he's doing. And if you want to help him out, that's good too. And we're going to encourage committees of safety to support him. We'll have him come talk to us soon about different things. But anyway, he's under Starter Committee of Safety. And you come down and let's see where he – here it is, Republic Review. So he's got a couple of videos we put up on our site, and he's got some bullet points and some basic information.
What's his name again, John?
GR. Letter G and the letter R. GR, that's what he's known by. And his website is in here, and it's called the Republic Review. We're going to have him come and talk to us soon and let people know a little more of what he's doing. And again, he'll tell us how we can help him. The Committees of Safety can help him because he's working in states trying to get states and the legislators to agree to get together to do this Republic Review to repair our Constitution as far as particular, not necessarily the Constitution, but the two amendments I spoke of, but also all of the repugnant legislation that might be in there. And there is a lot of that.
Okay, well, thank you, John. You better go get your son now.
Okay, thank you. All right. All right. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday, and hopefully we'll see most of you at the course. If you're not in the course, consider it, and we'll see you on Saturday, noontime. Thank you very much. Good night.
Good night.